Hello and welcome to Live Like the World is Dying, your podcast for what feels like the end times. I'm one of your hosts today, Brooke Jackson, and with me is Cassandra.
Hi.
We're going to be talking about poultry and our poultry friends, our poultry pets, perhaps you could call them. I've got chickens, Cass has quail, but first we're going to celebrate being a member of the Channel Zero Network of Anarchist Podcasts by sharing a jingle from one of our friends on the network. And that jingle goes, jingle, jingle, jingle.
It's going down and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying. There is no running. There is no hiding. There's only fighting or dying. It's going down and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying. There is no running. There is no hiding. There's only fighting or dying.
It's Going Down is a digital community center from anarchist, anti-fascist, autonomous, anti-capitalist, and anti-colonial movements. Our mission is to provide an autonomous and resilient platform to publicize and promote revolutionary theory and action.
Go to itsgoingdown.org for daily updates. Check out our online store for ways to donate and rate and follow us on iTunes if you like this podcast.
And we're back. Or we already were, perhaps. Who knows? Did we ever leave? Did we go anywhere? I was thinking about poultry this morning and chickens and how I ended up being a person who keeps chickens and realized it's kind of a funny, slightly ridiculous story, in fact, which I would love to tell you if you're interested in hearing it. It's a little twisty turvy.
No, but I want to hear it. I feel like as long as I've known you in our adult lives, you have had, for context, Brooke and I have known each other since like middle school. But in the like adult iteration of us knowing each other, I feel like you have always had chickens.
Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate. Yeah, I think I pretty much always had. Well, let me do the story and then
go for it.
Also, there's a cat on my desk, and she really needs to be near me. So we'll see if this becomes problematic for the podcast. If you hear meows, listeners, it's
oh my god, sorry.
She knows there's birds. Yes,
this doesn't work for. I wish this was a visual medium because it's a very cute cat.
Yes, my cat, Cassandra's cat, look fairly similar. Okay, so I was thinking about this morning. The first time I got chickens, I was like 19 or 20. I was in college and I had recently gotten married and which is a whole other story, obviously, stupid life choices. It's fine. Anyway, my husband and I went to a wedding reception for another one of our friends and, it was on a farm. I think it was like the family's farm and they had a box of baby chicks there, like a big box full of baby chicks.
How they get you.
Yeah. They were adorable. And like, there was a joke that the baby chicks were wedding favors.
Oh my god.
Take home a chick. And everyone was like, oh, ha, 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 ha. And I was like, no, really, can we take them?
But literally.
They were so cute. And they're like, I mean, yeah, I can't remember the rest of the story, but there were these chicks and they were joking they were wedding favors. And then when I, you know, called their bluff on it, they were like, no, you really can. And you shouldn't keep chickens or poultry alone. So I take two, which was not a hard sell. So I gathered up two baby chicks and took them back to our apartment.
Yeah, were you living in the city at the time? And like,
yep.
They're chicks. Didn't know if they were apartment. Roosters.
Yeah. And okay. my delightful, wonderful husband knew that this was completely mad. And I don't know why he let me get away with things like this, but he did. So we got them home. We have them in a box. And he's like, what are we going to do now? Because we can't raise chickens in the apartment. Like, these have to go somewhere. And I was like, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what we're going to do now. But look at how cute they are. And I knew nothing about chickens. His family had had chickens on and off growing up. So he knew things about chickens. But I didn't. No sense of like how long they're going to be little or anything like that.
I like how, Brooke, you're like you tend to like be very thoughtful and plan things out. And like, then occasionally... I don't know. I just got some chicks. I'll figure it out.
Yeah, there may have been more of a plan that I just don't remember, but the way my memory of this story works, and this is like 20 years ago, sure. At least. So my memory is that I did not have a plan and I just really wanted these adorable baby chicks. And he went. But obviously we couldn't keep them in the apartment. So he called up his parents who lived just outside of town and had about an acre and did lots of gardening and stuff and had chickens growing up. And he's like, hey, Brooke got these chickens. They need a home. And his, you know, delightful, wonderful parents said yes to taking these two chickens. And it started them back in the path of having chickens again. I think they hadn't had them for a while. And then after that, they also kept chickens for another 15 years or so until they moved out of that house. So, you know, we had to go visit them a lot. So those were my first couple of chickens, although they were, you know, raised elsewhere.
Did they have names?
I'm sure they did. What they were, I couldn't tell you at this point.
Cool.
So long ago. Yeah. So then, you know, go through college, graduate. Then when we bought our first home, which was, you know, just a couple of years later, we had also wanted to have chickens. So we got chickens again at that house. And credit to my husband from back then, that he really did all of the chicken care. And I really did not understand the time and energy and effort and care needs that they had, that it took to take care of them and go into.
You just wanted them.
I did. I wanted the eggs. And he knew what to do. And he was, you know, very handy. And we were doing the very traditional, you know, Mormon wife, husband, man stuff, you know.
Were you like, you were like Chad wife?
I mean, I also had a career. Like, I was working as an economist, you know, and
Trad wives can have careers. Feminism.
Yeah. So then after we split up, then I was technically homeless for a little while because I was like couch surfing on friends' things, trying to figure out what to do with my life. And then bought the house I'm in now, which I've been in for 7 or 8 years now. And a year or two into this house, got chickens. And then really, really learned what it meant to raise and take care of chickens, because like I said, bless his heart, he really did all the work with the first batch and I didn't understand all of that. So anyway, yeah, now I have chickens and have had chickens for the 6 or 7 continuous years now, not counting all the other iterations of chickens.
Hooray.
Now, does your story of getting quail, I think your story of getting quail is very different, right?
Oh, mine's very simple. I am allergic to chicken eggs. Which sucks. They were one of my favorite foods.
Yeah, I eat them a lot.
But maybe 15 years ago, I realized I was allergic. And so I went a long time without having any eggs. And at a certain point, realized that like, oh, duck and quail eggs are fine. So I was sort of, when I moved into a space that had enough of a yard to even consider keeping birds, I did some research and realized that ducks are a lot higher maintenance. And they also, I'm sure it's different in different places, but where we live, there are more restrictions around keeping chickens and ducks, whereas quail are just considered pets. Mm. So there really aren't restrictions.
Yeah.
Like I can keep roosters and I'm in city limits and then
roosters,
I can,
quail roosters.
Quail, yeah, clear. Quail yeah, roosters. Yeah. And I can, you know, hatch my own eggs and things like that. So. And I think it must have been like, I think it was before COVID. I don't think keeping quail was like a COVID experiment.
No, you had them when we were homeschooling.
Yeah. Together, yeah. So. That makes us sound even more like trad wives that we were homeschooling.
It was COVID. We all did weird things.
But yeah, and lots of trial and error, like trying to figure out how to keep them safe, because you can't let them free range like chickens. But I have some chicks in my garage right now. They're real cute. They're so tiny. And what I keep is they're Japanese quail. So they're like the largest quail, but they're still like a third of the size of a chicken.
They're adorable.
Yeah.
We'll talk about the poultry's inclination for death here, I think, in a little bit, how they're you know, just highly suicidal little animals.
Are chickens too?
Oh yeah, for sure.
Do you want to talk about safety stuff with keeping them?
Well, I was thinking about, like, we could talk a little bit about like coops and space and stuff. Yeah, yeah. And then as part of that, talk about safety stuff. I do just want to point out and giggle at how your quail journey was like a very intentional, like, I'm going to get these quail because I can eat these eggs and I can't eat other eggs. And mine was like, chickens. I mean, the latest iteration was very deliberate and thoughtful, but like my earliest experiences of chickens were, they're so cute. Yeah, it's a problem. Yeah, so coops. So your quail coop is a funny story.
It is, because we're like, we should talk about coops. I'm like, and it's time for Brooke to talk, because Brooke is the carpenter among us. And so I had a quail coop that was not working, and the raccoons were an issue, and it was horrible. And so then I was like, Brooke, please help.
They were like on the ground, right? Your quail, like our mutual friend who had built it did more of a, almost of a chicken style coop, right?
Yeah, which apparently works for some. So, okay, let's talk about what is needed for coops for these two different types of birds. Okay. Maybe. So,
and they have different needs. Yeah.
Yeah. So for quail, people can do in ground, on ground, or actually like dig into the ground a little bit for coops, and sort of a thick mulch on the bottom, which is what I tried to do, but they are not. Their sense of self-preservation isn't fantastic. yeah, and I live in an area with possums and raccoons and stuff, so they kept getting killed anyway. So the other way people keep them is in really high, like raised coops. And that's not true. People will keep them in like buildings and different types of coops, but these are the two that I've seen for like outdoor, which is where mine live.
Yeah. Yeah, so Cass's original coop had plenty of good materials, but you know, after some trial and error, like it wasn't working, and they asked me to help rebuild it, which it's still a very special experience for me that I got to come over and like help kind of redesign and rebuild.
You say help, but you did the whole thing. I was like nominally assisting, but it meant Brooke like teaching me how to use each tool and stuff.
That's okay. That's fair. But also I think it took me, you know, a few days or something, and you like had to put up with the quail being maybe inside your house for a while. And I was, you know,
sounds right.
It was a little bit learning for me too. Anyway. So yeah. So converted what was an on ground one for Cass into an above ground one. That's kind of at like, what would you say? I don't know, shoulder level or something like that.
Yeah. It's like chest height.
Yeah.
And then they need low ceilings. So it's right. Like high off the ground, but the coop itself is low. Mm-hmm. And they need like a smaller, not gauge wire, but it's smaller than chicken wire. Yeah, the opening.
Sort of. Yeah. That was one of the problems that we discovered. Because it was I don't know if it's the raccoons or the possums, like in regular chicken wire could like reach in. Into it, right? And they were, again, because quail has no self-preservation instinct, like whichever animal it was could fit its little paw in through the chicken wire and then just take a little swipe at the quail and it was dead.
Yeah, it was. We're not going to get into like the brutal stuff. I also eat the quail sometimes, which we won't get into the bloody things, but yeah, it was not a safe space for them.
Yeah.
So much smaller wire. Much higher up, much lower ceiling, because when they startle, they jump with such force that they can like break their necks. And they startle so easily.
Yeah. And you have to be careful about like putting anything that they can climb on or jump on.
Yeah.
In the coop.
Yeah.
And we did, let's see, the clean out trays. Do you want to talk about the clean out trays that you did for the quail that made life easier too? I don't know if you're still using things, you can change that.
Yeah, and then the bottom of the coop is also that sort of wire mesh. So, you know, their droppings can go straight through it. And then we put these big, I think the trays are meant for rabbits. I have one for my rabbit as well. And it's awesome because then I can take the trays out, dump it all in the compost bin, clean them. Put them back. And it also is an extra barrier so that predators can't reach up from underneath.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember this well. It was a fun project. It really was. So
it's
yeah,
still,
chicken.
This, it's been years and it's still.
Still holding up well. I love that too. Yeah, so chickens are a little bit different. They're not as likely to, I mean, they'll jump on things and they'll jump down from them, but they're not quite as frail in terms of being able to sort of easily kill themselves just by jumping badly or anything like that. But they are still, I mean, they're very dumb animals that have no self-preservation instinct. And I say that with all the love in the world, that they are very, very dumb. But yeah, will get themselves caught in things, you know, tangled up, lost, you know, they'll be, if they get out of the coop, they'll just, you know, peck at the ground. And if they find something interesting, they'll just follow it and follow it and follow it and follow it. And of course they have no sense of where home is and how to get back there. So they're,
it's a very Hansel and Gretel image.
Yeah, a little bit. They'll run away and get lost. So.
Sorry. I know people sometimes. People will let chickens free range though. Like, how does that work?
Yeah. So you can do some free ranging. You kind of always want to have some kind of coop structure because their instinct, you know, in the darkness when the sun goes down is to go into a, you know, a darker sheltered area. And they do want to, you know, snuggle up with each other and roost. And ideally they like to, actually perch themselves. Oh. So like in the coop that I have has, just a normal like rectangle with a triangle roof on it, right? Mm-hmm. And it's a open roof, and then there's a support beam that runs along the rectangle part, so they can jump up onto that and be in that triangle part in the rafters, because mm-hmm. that's mm-hmm. how they want to be up like that when they're sleeping at night.
Cute.
So yeah, it's pretty adorable. I'll go out there at, you know, sunset, just before or just after, and open the door to make sure that they're all up there and they're just snuggled together in their little line.
Quail just huddle in a corner in a little puddle of feathers.
I mean, that's
which is also cute.
Yeah. Yeah. So you can have free ranging, but again, they're going to want to have some kind of, then, you know, shelter or space to go into.
Gotcha.
But the free ranging has its own complications. I mean, they can jump higher than you'd think that they can. You know, not 6 feet, but they can jump up on something that's 4 or, you know, sometimes even 5 feet. So even if you're in a quote unquote fenced yard, you know, how tall is your fence and can they potentially still jump over and out? So like my fence, you know, along where my neighbors are next to the coop is a shorter fence. It's just like a 4.5 foot fence. So, mm-hmm. before I had them kind of well enclosed, like they are now, they would sometimes jump up on that fence or jump over that fence, and I'd have to go to the really sweet older lady next door and go rescue my chickens from her yard.
Go chicken hunting.
Yeah, a little bit. So at most places, you know, you and I both live in the city and like mm-hmm. not even on the edges of the city, like well surrounded by suburbia, and still have to deal with things like possums and raccoons. Raccoons are my big one.
Yeah.
Here. Yeah. And I know that rats, I've heard from others, maybe can't kill them, but will get aggressive with them. You know, all these critters that seek food.
I've heard in some areas snakes are a big problem for quail kept on the ground.
Mm, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So having a fully enclosed space is often the best choice. And what I learned a little bit through trial and error, and this is one of those things that goes back to when I first had chickens, that when my husband built the coop, he insisted it be tall enough that he could walk in. And I thought he was being just the most ridiculous, but whatever, you know, he's the one who built it. And then in this house, I built a run that was, you know, shorter, like 3 or 4 feet on the sides. And then when I realized they could jump out of it, then I put a roof on top of that. And then I realized that there were times when I needed to get into that run and I would be like hands and knees crawling.
Oh no.
And I realized, oh, I need to be able to stand up and at least part of this chicken run. So had to reconfigure and build it up higher. So yeah, having a run that you can stand up in for chicken anyway is kind of a must if you have them fully enclosed, because you will need to go in there to do things.
Sure.
So yeah, that's a little bit about coops. And you can buy, you know, pre-made chicken coops from places. I have had experience, you know, we live in a place that's much wetter and has harsher winters. So some of the pre-made ones really aren't made to hold up well against the weather. Like you buy one of those $200 ones on Amazon and it's really not going to make it very long. The one I have was custom built by a friend of mine who keeps chickens. And she built it at her house and she was moving and didn't want to deal with deconstructing it and moving it, and said, "Hey, if you come take this apart, you can have it." So
nice.
Yeah, yeah, I did that. And it's a really nice, really, cause she's actually like a journeyman carpenter. Yeah, that's how I ended up with the coop that I have that I really like.
I question.
Yeah.
First answer. Though, I realized I didn't explain why you can't let quail free range, and it's because they won't come back. They can fly short distances. Like, I think I've probably seen one fly about 10 feet in the air.
Oh, wow.
And they're real fucking fast. So,
yeah.
And also just susceptible to all the predators. One of the reasons I went with this type of quail is because research said they do okay in our climate in the winter. They wouldn't need like extra heat or anything like that.
That's nice.
Outdoors. I assume that's true for chicken because so many people keep chickens here.
Yeah. Okay. Generally, you know, we live in, and I think, what are we, hardiness zone 7 or 8 or something like that. So we maybe get one snow or two very short in the winters. Summers, you know, up to 90s-ish. Sometimes there's like a week that's in the 90s or we'll break 100, but not super high either. So pretty moderate temperatures. And they can handle those extremes pretty well. You know, in their enclosed space, they will huddle together for warmth, although it still can be helpful to have a little bit of a heating light in that coop during the winter, especially in the frozen time. But you have to be really careful with those because you can start a fire with those lights. So like I mentioned, the coop that I have them in is lofted. And there's, you know, a space that was deliberately built where you can hang a heating light that's not going to overheat anything. So that was a good design choice there. So I'll put that in the winter, and then like if it snows or if we just have a bunch of nights below freezing, turn that on, and then their water will freeze and they need lots of water. So you have to go out and break the water. But yeah, and then in the summer they can, you know, if we have days that are above 100, that can be a lot for them. So you may have to put out some ice or frozen berries. We do, my brother taught me that frozen watermelon chunk is really good because it's mostly liquid. So they get moisture that they need, and they're not putting out too much energy to eat it, and it's cooling them. So
that's smart.
Yeah.
I do ice packs.
Okay.
You can tell if quail are getting too hot because they start to pant a little bit, and chickens so I'll too. Put ice packs out for them to still perch on them.
Yeah. 2 or 3 years ago when we had that hot streak that was like 115 or something like that. Not a streak, it was a couple days, which is really, really unusual.
Unheard of.
Yeah, for us. I did have like a couple of heat strokey chickens and it kind of collapsed on the ground outside.
Oh.
And I had to like scoop them up and bring them in, and I put them in a big plastic tub and dripped ice water on their little beaks, and they recovered. I wasn't sure if they were going to, but they did pull through. But that taught me to be very aware of the temperatures. They've got a lot of good shade in their coop, so that helps too.
Yeah. Yeah, that was wow. That was in like June too. That was completely late June, insane.
Early July. But yeah, it was. Oof, that screwed up things. Let's not do that again. Oh wait, climate change. When it comes to cleaning the coops for chickens, the coop itself I've got to clean out. Depends on how many chickens I have, because that's, you know, how much waste they're putting out. But I would say every 3 to 4 months, I've got to clean out the one that I've got, just because when they sit up there at night in their little perch, they, you know, poop, and all those droppings get dropped into the coop and into the bedding, and that needs to get cleaned out.
So when you say clean it, you're just changing out the bedding?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And I use pine bedding. You never want to use a cedar bedding with chickens or quail or any kind of poultry, because they have very frail little lungs, and the aromatics of cedar are very, very strong and very hard on their little bodies. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. The cedar pellets that they use for horses, the process removes.
Yeah.
The way those are processed removes the aromatics, and at least McQuail do fine with them.
Sorry. I meant shavings.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, yeah. Pellets are one thing. I do.
Those are amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
The pine or the cedar. I only got the cedar once because they were out of pine, and I like swear by those for my rabbit, my quail, my cat. Any sort of litter or bedding is those horse. What is it? What are they called? They're just called horse pellets. That makes it sound like horse poop, but it's not. It's like
it's cedar pellets. It's pet bedding, animal bedding pellets.
You can get giant like 40-pound bags for cheap at the farm store.
I use those for when I have baby chicks, but for my bigger chickens, I don't. I think that's a little bit price and also absorption. And yeah, I don't know. I've just always used the shavings in the big girl's coop. So I've got to basically I close them out of their coop and kind of climb in there and brush up all of the shavings. And you don't have to be that thorough. I just am because I'm kind of pedantic sometimes. And you could just scrape out as much as you can and leave some of the old stuff, and that's fine too. And then put in a fresh layer of the bedding. In the coop itself, in the run, I don't have to clean out the run really ever, but I do have to put straw down a couple times in the winter because it does get muddy. And chickens, I don't know if quail are the same way, but chickens they peck everything. They will just absolutely strip all of the green and life and any other color out of their surroundings until it's just a brown, muddy hovel.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it's pretty, like, if you want to get rid of a lawn, you know, make a roving chicken coop for yourself or chicken run for yourself and just, you know, move it and they will destroy your grass because they also like to scratch and dig constantly. Yeah. So
that makes the chicken tractor concept, like, it made sense to me anyway because you're like fertilizing an area, but, you know, get rid of all the weeds in the process, and that's interesting.
Yeah, any weeds that are like around the outsides of the coop, it's not the coop, the run, get taken care of. Like, no greenery will survive in the area of the run.
That's good to know.
Yeah. And good to know if you're thinking about, you know, having some amount of free ranging on your chickens, that they are merciless and they will get to things and go for things. And that's part of why they'll do things like jump up over a 4-foot or 5-foot fence. Like, the nice old lady next door has really beautiful green grass, and they're like, ooh, green grass. So they'll jump over the fence to get to that pretty green grass that they want to eat. little stinkers.
They are little stinkers. Yeah, the quail are simple because they have, mine at least have those trays that we were talking about, and not everything falls in the tray. So like underneath the quail pen, I just keep straw and sort of turn it occasionally, and the straw and the trays, I don't time it. It's just when things look full, I put it in the compost pile and then use straw and pine pellets or cedar pellets as a base. And then the compost, I have a food compost, and then I have a bird and rabbit, actually, poop compost, because the bird poop needs to age.
Yes.
For like a year before you use it. So
yeah, same thing with chickens. And this is something I learned from my former in-laws, is that they had used their chicken manure and put it directly on the garden one year and then realized it kind of burned everything.
Yeah.
And so then they had to kind of start a system for that. And one of our Patreon members mentioned, you know, it makes really great fertilizer, the chicken poop. And it does, but it's not like shovel it out of the coop, throw it on my garden. It's, you know, there's a step in between.
For yeah. Sure. And then if you're using, like, depending on what type of bedding you're using, like the pine is more acidic too. So I also want that to age more. Yeah.
Yeah.
Things to consider.
Do you have issues with the straw at all? Because I sometimes like will get straw sprouting a little bit. Like when I layer the run with it, it'll try and sprout a little bit.
Yeah. You have to get the kind that doesn't have, I can't remember if it's straw or hay or what. Like, there's a, if you, Wilco, the farm store here, you can read the descriptions, and one might have seeds and sprouts and the other does not. Okay. And I'm assuming it has to do with like when they harvest it.
I would imagine you're getting straw because hay is generally used for feed. So I'm not an expert on those, but I know I definitely get straw and it does some amount of sprouting and it's not good for me to try and put into the compost because of the way it breaks down, the way it could potentially sprout and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I'm letting it age and stuff for sure. Or getting the kind that doesn't have seeds. I get it so infrequently, like a bale lasts me forever. And every time I get one, I have to like do the research and figure out.
Yeah, I typically get one bale of straw per winter and I use, you know, half of it early winter and then use the other half of it a little later in the winter. This year, I almost needed to get a third one, but then our spring rains, not a third one, a second bale of straw. But our spring rains stopped so early that the mud didn't become an issue. Oh, and that's the thing about the run for the chickens is that you don't want them running around in mud and standing water and stuff. They can get diseases on their feet.
Yeah.
And you want to be careful and sensitive of that. And it can take a lot of care if they do get a sickness of, you know, having to pick them up and clean it and put on medications and stuff like that to resolve it. So best to keep them from getting sick in the first place.
Do you want to talk about ailments?
Sure. Yeah.
Birdie first aid.
Yeah, I thankfully haven't had to do too much with any of my chickens. I mean, I mentioned that, you know, I've had ones that got heat stroke and having to bring them in and just, you know, like I think you would with any animal or pet, you know, trying to cool it down and revive it, get it cold water and that kind of thing. I'm trying to think if I've had any injuries with any of my chickens. And I don't think I ever have. I think if they get in they'll get in a squabble with a predator sometimes. And if they survive it, then the predator may have like pulled out some feathers and stuff, but then they're okay. Or they didn't survive it. And at least for me, in my experience, it's kind of the two extremes and that's about it.
Same. I've found similar. I feel like the only sorts of injuries I've seen are the sort where when I find them in the morning, they're dead.
Yep.
Unfortunately, whether it's from, sometimes it's mysterious. I'm like, what? There's no mark on you. What, what happened? And I just won't ever know, you know? But yeah, or if it's a predator, which I haven't dealt with in a long time, thankfully, because I keep roosters. You have to keep a really close eye on your like rooster to hen ratio. Mm-hmm. Because the roosters will like pluck feathers from between the hen's shoulder blades and it can cause a wound if you have like too many roosters, basically.
Okay.
And also they can get aggressive with each other. So like the only sorts of like bloody wounds have been from overly aggressive roosters either.
Okay.
Just being roosters and there being too many of them or being aggressive and attacking each other. And that's like at this point the only time I really kill a bird prematurely as if it's a rooster who's attacking other birds and their beaks are really sharp. So like they can really gash each other. But then other than that, I think I've seen a prolapse once.
Okay.
And it wasn't, I've read about like, if you have a hen with a prolapse, like Epsom soaks and things, but this was like severe. And it was obviously in pain. So that's another instance where I had to kill the bird, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And then other than that, they just get old. Like I've seen sort of birdie arthritis in their little knees. But like, yeah, that's about it. As long as they can get to food and water and aren't being bullied, you know.
Right.
Mostly I'm just letting them do their thing.
Yeah. Chicken roosters similarly are very aggressive. And I can't remember, I don't think we're allowed to have chicken roosters here in the city, but I don't particularly want one. That's just a whole nother layer of work and things to deal with and learning about fertilized eggs and incubating. And it's just so easy to just go to the farm store and buy some baby chicks if I want chicks. And yeah, they are aggressive and can definitely hurt the hens. And then, yeah, you mentioned, you know, just injury and life cycle and stuff. So if you're thinking about getting poultry of some kind, one of the things you need to think about is injury care and end of life care. And if you, you know, want to be somebody who takes the chicken or whatever to a vet, then having a vet for that and choosing to invest in that. And there are vets that will, you know, help with poultry or
at least chickens.
Right. Yeah. I'm probably ducks too, I would imagine.
Yeah. I don't.
Probably not so much with quail.
No, it's very much like if there's an injury, you separate the bird. I have a salve, like a Manuka honey based salve I'll use if they'll let me get to them. But like sometimes it's like upsetting to them. Like they'll injure themselves more if I try to like hold them down to help them. So honestly, it's like separating them and just like watching and letting them heal.
Yeah. Yeah. So you have to decide if, you know, if you're going to try and do some first aid yourself, if you're going to, you know, take them to a vet and pay for a vet, or, you know, under what circumstances it might be time to choose end of life. And, you know, we've agreed not to talk about that too terribly much in the course of this podcast, but that is definitely a choice that I have had to make as well because of, you know, their health or injuries or whatnot.
It's something that, I mean, unless you have a friend or a vet who can help in that way, like it's a thing you have to consider. If you're going to keep poultry, like, is this a thing I'm comfortable doing?
Right.
You know, and they're not comfortable, but like willing to do.
Right. Yeah. And it's not easy for, you know, as many of them as I've seen that happen and needed to, or chose to do myself. It's for me anyway, still a very emotional experience. And thankfully I have some really beautiful, you know, practices from my tribe that we do to honor the, you know, the sacredness of the life that helped me with, deciding what you're going to do with your chickens. And when they stop, then there was a question of that one of our Patreon members asked about, what to do when your birds stop laying. I'm super curious for quail, Cass, let me ask you two questions. One, can you tell your quail apart? And therefore, two, like, do you know when a specific one has stopped laying or if it's older or what have you?
I can't really tell my quail apart. Like, occasionally a rooster. What?
I kind of thought that was the answer, but I wasn't sure.
Occasionally, like, I have a rooster who has very red coloring for some reason. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that rooster. But, like, for the most part, they look very fucking similar. one another, to the extent that like I really need to get them like head on so I can see their chest to even determine when one's a rooster or a hen. Because these aren't the quail with the little hats, the little, you know, feather at the top that people are thinking of. They look very different. Look up a picture of a Japanese quail, and they do come in different colors. This is just the type I have. I'll look real similar. So I can tell when they're getting old because their knees start to get a little swollen. You know, they start to move slower.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't like tag them or anything to like
keep track.
I figure, okay, quail only lay eggs half the year anyway.
Right.
So like the other half of the year, I'm just like, you know, managing a quail hotel. And then when they're old, it's just like, look, you were my little friend. Let me eat your eggs for your whole life. You can, this is just like a quail retirement home now.
Yeah.
And that's fine.
Yeah. So if you had different kinds of quail, you'd be able to tell at least the different like breeds of if is breeds I word like, yeah, like dog breeds, quail breeds, you'd be able to tell them apart that way. Right. If they weren't all the Japanese quail.
Yeah, and there are different types of, I've seen different like varieties of Japanese quail, like some that are like sort of a blonde color and some lay bluish eggs, and it's a whole like scene to like collect different types. I'm like, look, I'm very happy with my plain brownish red quail. They're all beautiful to me.
Yeah, I get that. Well, chickens come in so many different kinds, and you, you can get, and I like to get a variety of different kinds of chickens. And in fact, until my former in-laws started keeping chickens, and my former mother-in-law really liked different chickens as well. I didn't even realize just how many varietals there were, and different colors and sizes. And different breeds will lay different colored eggs. So, you know, we're all familiar with, I think you can go to the store and you get normal white eggs, and then you can sometimes also get brown eggs. And then some folks know that you can also get kind of bluish or greenish chicken eggs as well. Those are out there. And you may or may not have ever noticed that there are lighter brown and darker brown eggs, and brown eggs or eggs that have speckles or spots on them, and eggs don't. And that all comes back to being different breeds of chicken. So I like having the variety a little bit for the fun of it. So like I have one that lays a greenish egg, which I believe the more universal term for ones that lay green or blue eggs are Easter eggers. Like, it's not their breed name, but like the ones that lay those colors are different kinds of Easter eggers. I could be misremembering that. So somebody feel free to correct me if I'm wrong there. So I have one Easter egger. That's not its breed. It's just, it lays a green one. And then one that's laying, so I have, like I was saying, one that lays greenish bluish egg. And then there's one that lays a dark brown egg. And then two that are doing lighter brown eggs. I actually have a fifth chicken as well. She's older and has stopped laying. So
how long do they lay?
That's another thing that really depends on the variety of chicken. Generally, you get a couple of years of laying out of them, decent laying, depending on health and climate and many other factors. They may lay shorter or longer periods of time. And the number of eggs they lay, again, this varies a lot by breed of chicken. And so when I go to pick out new baby chicks, in addition to the fun of wanting to pick out ones that lay different colors and stuff, I do also look at the little information card will usually give an estimate of how frequently they lay. So you get ones that, lay nearly every day versus ones that maybe lay only half the year, like your quail do.
Oh, interesting. So you have some that lay during the winter?
Kind of. I mean, it depends on how much light they get,
right,
and a little bit on how much warmth, because it is, it's hard on their little bodies to churn their eggs out. Even this last winter with most of my chickens are younger. Last year was their first year of laying. I still think there's probably a couple of months there when I really didn't get any eggs. Mm-hmm. Maybe just really sporadically got an egg. So.
Yeah. With quail, it's almost exactly like fall equinox to spring equinox, nobody's laying. And I'm always like, spring has officially arrived when I get my first quail egg, which is usually within a week of the equinox. It's pretty interesting.
Okay, that's interesting.
Very like light dependent, obviously.
Yeah. My every winter my mom reminds me, she's like, go put a light in their coop, they'll lay more. And I'm like,
they can relax for a bit.
Yeah. Let their bodies do what they're gonna do, and it's fine.
And I don't know, the shell of quail eggs is a lot it's a lot different than the shell of chicken eggs. It cracks differently and it's like thicker.
Right.
But I can keep them in the fridge. Like if I don't wash them and put them straight in the fridge, I still have eggs for a good portion of the winter.
Yeah. This is a mistake I make in the summer, because when they're all laying, I will get 3 to 4 a day every day through the summer. And then I'm like, I have so many eggs, and I will share them and give them away to people. Sure. And then it'll come into the fall and they'll slow down and I'll be like, oh, shoot. Because, they'll keep for 3-4 months. I could have more eggs through the winter if I guess stockpiled them a little bit more.
Yeah, people talk about all these different, and I've tried all these different methods to like preserve them and et cetera. And it's like, just put them in the fridge.
Yeah. Cause you can do some pickled eggs.
Yeah.
That'll help keep them, hard boil them and pickle them.
What about, let's see, we even talked about food. It's a boring subject for my quail, but probably far more interesting for chickens. So what do your chickens eat?
I do buy bags of food pellets for them. I try to get organic ones, but they do tend to be twice as much for an organic mix feed. So that can be, especially with five chickens, really cost prohibitive. So I'm doing, you know, maybe one bag of the organic feed mix for every three or four of the other pellets. And, you know, watch for things like if it goes on sale and I can get one, or just if I had a, you know, better month financially, I can pick it up. And then they will eat scraps too. So it's nice when it's garden season, you know, if my lettuce bolts off, I can just cut the whole head of lettuce. They love greens, anything green they'll eat. And then some amount of leftover household foods. You know, if I get lettuce in the winter from the store and can't get through it all the time, you know, they're happy to eat the rest of that. Leftover fruits that my, you know, we don't get to in time, like grapes. I mean, they'll peck at pretty much anything, especially if it has color. Whether or not they should eat it is another question. And kind of like how you don't want to put meat or dairy scraps in your compost bin, you don't want to feed those to your chickens either.
Oh, okay.
They are little cannibalistic scavengers, and they will eat their own eggs. Mm-hmm. So if they run out of food or they run out of water, they will peck open their own eggs and eat out the contents, which if they do that too much, then they get used to that as a food source. And then you have a problem of you have to be really good about getting in there and getting their eggs and getting them off of that. So that was a bit of a problem through the winter here because they lay so infrequently, I wasn't doing a good job checking. So there were some eggs sitting around and they sort of got used to eating them. So in the spring here, I've had to be really good about going out there, checking at least a couple times a day and getting them out just as quickly as I can to break them of that habit.
Do you have to give them extra stuff during laying season? Like, do you have to change the protein content of the feed, or do you have to give them like oyster shell or anything?
I don't have to. I do generally try and mix in some higher protein feed bags. Again, those are a little more expensive than the regular stuff, but only by like a couple of dollars for a 40-pound bag. So I do try, you know, when they're in the season and the summer especially, and they're laying a lot more to mix up their feed a little bit to compensate for how much extra work their little bodies are doing and putting out. Well, I know one of the chicken questions that we had here, you know, was about whether or not you have to buy feed for them. And
okay.
I think it would be really difficult to get them enough food and enough of the right varieties of food by, you know, growing or giving them scraps from your own leftovers, unless you were doing some amount of like intentional growing. And I have thought about doing some intentional lettuce growing and things like that for the chickens, but you know, they do eat a fair amount, and if you really want them to be, you know, healthy and have good nutrition and balance, which I care about my chickens a lot, so that's an important thing to me.
Yeah, especially if they're not. It seems like that would be a lot of work, especially if they're not like foraging for their own food.
Right. You know? Yeah.
Like they're limited to whatever you put in there for them.
Right. Right. Yeah. So anyway, so I do have to buy feed, and I think it would be very unusual to not have to buy feed for them. You can make your own feed. You know, you can go out and buy oats and this and that and mix together things to make your own feed as well. But again, nutritional balance is an important thing. You have to learn about that and how to create the right mix to do that. So.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
What theoretically, do quail eat?
What's that?
What do quail eat?
Yeah. So I was so excited to like have poultry and like a place for food scraps to go other than the compost. Mm-hmm. And like in theory, they'll act like chickens and eat. My quail do not. Like, I feel like I've tried various fruits and vegetables and stuff. And actually I would need to do more research, but I've read that people will give their quail meat because they need a huge amount of protein.
Okay.
Which is what I was looking up, like what percentage
protein.
And it's 24 to 30% protein diet.
Wow.
For chicks. And then the adults need 18 to 20%. Okay. I just do a 20% for all my birds, and it's been fine.
Okay.
And I'll like add mealworms in especially when they're younger, for some extra protein. But yeah, I have tried various kitchen scraps or even just like weeds from the yard. They like to sort of peck at stuff, but they don't, it's not the same as chickens.
Yeah.
I'll come in 3 days later and there will be like a husk of a shriveled cucumber that they're done playing with, you know?
Yeah, that'll never happen with the chickens. Even if it's something they don't like, they're not very smart little birds. You know, you'll watch them peck at a thing and kind of have this reaction of like, oh, that was gross. And then it takes them 3 seconds to reset. And
to go
like,
back.
Oh, let me peck at that thing. Oh, that's gross. And maybe do that enough times that they then walk away for a minute, but then they come back and peck at it again because that's what they are.
Awesome.
I should back up and say, it's not that you can't feed chickens meat. I don't know what all of the things are there and you should and shouldn't. I just know that things like meat and some kinds of foods and vegetables will attract more predators.
Sure.
And that has definitely been an issue in my own coop and with friends as well of, you know, if it's something that the raccoon wants to come and eat, even if they're not interested in the chickens themselves, that they're interested in the food scraps, but they will go for the chickens and they will go for the chickens. I didn't say this earlier, the chickens' eggs, like raccoons and other predators, they want the eggs. And, so it's not even so much they necessarily want to attack the chickens, though maybe that's part of it, but they want to get, you know, if you've put certain kinds of food scraps in there, the predators want to go for those. So that's another reason to be conscious of what kind of food scraps you are and aren't feeding them.
That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mostly just stick with the bagged. The farm store nearest to me has one type of game bird feed that is a small enough crumble because they're tiny. Wait, it has to be small. You can't just feed them whole grains.
Right. They'll choke.
They're so little.
Right? They'll try and eat them and they'll die.
Yeah. So it's a small enough crumble and a high enough protein. And I think it's just like Purina. It's like the game bird feed. Starter feed.
Okay.
So.
Okay. That makes sense.
That's what I get because that's all I found in my area. And then I just add in, I get like bags of, it sounds gross, but bags of dried mealworms. They love that shit.
Oh my gosh. My chickens do.
Yeah. And then I will, especially in the spring, like right before the equinox, I'll start adding some, I said it before. Oh, oyster shell.
Oyster shell. Okay.
Like powdered oyster shell. And with their feed because I don't know why.
But I bet they need it more because I think that that oyster shell helps them. It gives them calcium and helps them build stronger eggshells, which with
Is only an issue in the spring for some reason.
Okay.
Or I've only had issues with quail laying soft eggs in the spring. And the risk there isn't like, oh, darn it. A soft egg I can't eat. It's like, oh, there's more risk of it getting like impacted or prolapse and things like that. So
I mean, that makes sense if they haven't been laying in the winter and they're getting back in the cycle, their body's, you know, going through an adjustment of getting back into doing this. So the mealworms are fun. My oldest chicken, the one that doesn't lay, you know, she's very used to me now and not no fear of me whatsoever and follows me around and is super sweet. And when I go to open the coop and, you know, check on their food levels, check on their bedding, make sure they're put in for the night, she always pops down and comes running up at me and is just like in the doorway, in my face, you know, wanting attention and treats particularly. So if I grab a little handful of mealworms and hold it out to her, she'll just eat out of my hands. Yeah. And slowly
my quail would never.
Right. It's a very different dynamic. And so like, she's kind of the leader because she's the oldest. So she's taught, you know, a couple of the other ones have learned like, oh, if I want to enjoy this special treat as well, I'm going to have to approach the human thing. And a couple of them are like comfortable enough to kind of eat out of my hand occasionally too. But I every day she comes up and it's just in my business. Like,
cute.
I adore her. I will be sad when it's her time, but she's doing good for now.
I've tried like being very handsy and like holding and interacting with a ton. Because I hatched my own
babies.
Babies and raised them that way. I haven't found a way to get them to like, not even like interacting with me to it, but to at least be accustomed
tolerate
to it.
Like, Yeah.
No. No. Every time they see me, I'm a complete stranger and huge and terrifying. Like, okay.
I know you can with chickens. I know you can from like the time that their chicks, you know, develop that rapport. I don't know that I've ever really tried to, but I have noticed that in my chickens that live sort of old enough to the point where they stop laying and they're just sort of hanging around, they mellow out and have gotten used to me. And I sing at them. Okay. I talk to them, you know, I'm the one that brings them the treats. So she's got to be, I think the older one's probably 4 years old at this point. So for the life of a chicken, like she's old, she's used to me for sure. And that makes a difference.
I've seen people keep like button quail, the really tiny ones as like pets inside in enclosures.
Oh, wow.
And I guess I haven't heard of people being able to just like hold and pet them, but they seem less terrified generally.
Okay.
Maybe because they're like seeing you 24/7. I don't know.
Yeah. No, that could make sense. And the household noises and stuff.
Yeah. Supposed to be completely removed from predators.
Right. Yeah.
Even seeing or knowing that predators exist.
Interesting.
Yeah. Birds are funny.
They are. Okay. So we've talked about, you know, what you feed them, how you house them, dealing with predators, end of life care. All that kind
What's
of
your favorite thing about keeping chickens?
Oh boy. That's a tough one, actually.
And like, or maybe, and or why chickens? This isn't like the battle of which birds to keep, but you know,
sure.
Like sell me on chickens, you know, assuming I wasn't allergic.
Right. I mean, they're less death prone. Well, if I'm doing versus quails, right, they're less death prone than the quails. So there's that.
True.
But, you know, they have a fair amount of their own little personalities, which is fun and enjoyable. They are, while they need like regular check-in and, you know, occasionally some heavier care, they're not too work intensive. You know, I've got to check on them daily and make sure their coop is closed at night and open in the morning and restock water. But they're not a super high maintenance animal to have around, and you get the benefits of the eggs. And, you know, they're just kind of fun, sweet little weirdos. And once you're all set up with them, you know, you have a coop and you have a run and whatnot. There's not a lot more like building or intense labor again to them. And yeah, and then the fresh eggs are super delicious to have around. It's nice to just go outside and grab a couple eggs and eat them. I like that a lot.
I just imagine you just like popping them raw the way you said that. I
haven't quite gotten there yet.
Go outside and just eat them.
just crack it open into my mouth and just do that.
Ugh. Gaston style.
Wow. Oh, yeah. That sounds terrible. But no, I am trying to do a better job of eating them. You know, a question that I don't think anybody asked, but I bet people ponder or are pondering because egg prices have been high, is about the economics of keeping them and whether or not it makes like financial sense to keep them. And I bet that pencils out for you with quail, right? Because quail eggs have got to be hard to find and super expensive when you do.
Yeah. And it's my diet is such that like I have, my protein sources are limited. So right. it's cheaper for me to keep them than to buy quail eggs in the quantity I want. If I could eat other eggs and could eat grains and could, you know, all this other food, like, I don't know if that would be cost effective for me.
And is that true, like, even relative to the fact that you have to buy feed for them and buy bedding and stuff for them? Like, it's still cheaper to buy those things for the quails?
For me, it is. Yeah.
Okay.
Like the bedding I was saying I use for my other animals too. They don't go through, they're so tiny. They don't go through a 40-pound bag nearly as fast as chickens do, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, the rabbit maybe.
Yeah. And also like, I also think of it as like a long-term preparedness thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because where we live, the laws are such, I can keep roosters. There's not a limit on how many quail I can keep. I mean, there is, because I don't want to like cram them in a small space, even though technically they'd be fine. That's not how I try to treat them. What was I saying? I got distracted by the ethics of quail pens. Oh, like long term for me, it's worth it because from a community preparedness standpoint, because I have this sort of, I don't know, I don't want to talk about them as like a resource, but like, you know,
a little bit. I mean, it is true though, but yeah, no, I get it. And I, you know, with all of the egg prices up and down and scarcity and stuff in the news, you know, I haven't had to be aware of that and haven't really understood most of that because I have this own egg source, and it helps me eat seasonally a little bit too. Like when they're laying eggs is when I have eggs and when I use eggs, and when they don't, I don't generally run out and buy them. And that's probably a luxury that I can do that maybe others can't have that flexibility. I actually don't know for sure if my chickens pencil out in terms of like the amount of money I spend on their feed.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't done math. You know how I feel about math. I'm just guessing. You're the math person.
Ever. I don't think I'm losing anything. I bet, especially with the current egg prices, it probably makes sense and pencils out. And then like in the summer when I can supplement their food a little bit with things out of the garden, too. But there is, the independence of it, the being self-sustaining of having, you know, the resource there, and little buddies also, you know, are sort of pet-like.
And a compost machine.
Companionship. Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
That's a really important part of it for me, is not having to spend money, because I, you know, am growing vegetables too. So they're contributing to like the rest of the food in my yard as well. And also I always have so many extra eggs. So being able to give people protein is nice.
Right. Yeah. I like being able to share that. Yeah. If you factor in the like initial startup costs of them, i.e., you know, getting or building a coop and a run, it probably takes much longer for all of that to pencil out. So it's, you know, you have to think about more than just the cost of the egg in the consideration, if that's part of your decision making. You mentioned, you know, city regulations and roosters. So that was the last thing I just remembered that I wanted us to touch on before we wrap it up. I don't know if you were still in town or maybe in the Portland area, if you were off being a hobo somewhere. Like about 15 years ago, there was a big movement in here in the Willamette Valley. Like it was big in Portland, but also the rest of the large towns in the valley took it up too, about having chickens in yards. And it was legal in some places and not legal in others, or not explicitly illegal in some others. And a lot of cities took it up as an issue. And I think maybe nationally it was too. I don't know. Sometimes I'm in my own little valley bubble here. But it was something that had to kind of go through city systems. And there were plenty of people I know who were choosing to keep chickens, even though it technically wasn't legal. Because at least for our city, it's not a thing that they were going to be real harsh and crack down about a lot, especially depending on where you live. So you may be able to skirt the law. There may not be a law. It might be worth, you know, having chickens to help create the movement to make that possible. There's a lot of considerations there as well.
Yeah, I think I was living in Portland at the time, because I remember reading about it and just thinking like, I lived in like a housing co-op at the time, where a few old timers in the Alberta area had years and years and years ago bought houses near each other. And like, you know, one person had the giant garden that grew this thing, and another person had that thing. And one of the people had goats. And so like, I would help like walk the goats downgoing Portland. This was years ago, so I don't even know if they're still there. I'm not doxing myself, but I don't know. And I also don't know if you could still do it at this point, but I remember reading about the chicken controversy and being like, I'm walking a fucking goat in Portland.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure goats got rolled into the laws when they ended up making them, because they created some kind of like chart that's like, you can have, I'm making up the exact numbers, but it was something like, you can have 8 chickens, or you can have 4 chickens and 2 rabbits, or you can have 1 goat and 1 chicken, or you can have, like, it was this, you know, cross-reference of how many different animals that you can have.
Yeah, like checking if you do want to get birds, checking what the rules are in your area and what is considered livestock and what is not. Because quail are not where I live. Like, that's all. That can all be pretty important. And also, like, if you're going to put the work into, like, setting up an enclosure and all that stuff, you want to make sure you're not going to, like, upset a neighbor who can call the city on you for something or, you know.
Yeah, that can definitely be an issue. And in the current neighborhood I'm in, nobody gives a fuck. Like, we have more important things to worry about than each other's.
One would hope that's stuff. True.
But in my previous neighborhood, which I don't know if you remember where I used to live, like, I had the kind of neighbors that would call you if you left your trash can out a day longer than pickup day and stuff like that. So very, very different set of issues.
HOA mentality.
A little bit.
Ugh. Well, let's see. Do we have any chicken closing ideas? I feel like we need to tell, like, a why did the chicken cross the road joke or something to end. Like, I don't know how to end, you know? Why did the quail break its neck?
Yeah, it didn't. It probably stopped and got hit by a car because it's dumb.
I like that both our anecdotes were morbid.
Well, once you've had them for a while, I mean, they're just, they don't want to live. It's like they don't have much of a will to live, and you have to have that for them if you want them to.
I was going to say that more of them live than die.
This is true.
But that's not true, because they all eventually die. But, like, I have spent more time hanging out with alive and fine quail.
And a lot of, I don't know about yours passing, but, like, a lot of the ways I've lost my chickens have been trauma, you know, like a raccoon or whatever has gotten in the coop and tussled with them, and you find, you know, some sort of horrific, you know, horror movie scene. So, like,
this is not how we should end this episode.
But I do think it's really important to know, like, that's a thing to be aware of that can happen, you know, if you're choosing to have them. So there's a lot of joy and fun and love and ridiculousness and tasty eggs to be had, but there can be some heartbreak and even a little bit of trauma about their passing and so forth. You know, it's circle of life.
Yeah, and you have to, like, be their protector, you know.
I could end with a circle of life. That's probably
it. No, I don't want that stuck in my head.
And it moves on. Well, it's going to be stuck in my head now, so
that's okay. Right. Time to end the podcast.
Lion King. All right, fine. The end. Thanks for listening to this episode of Live Like the World is Dying. If you enjoyed this podcast, you may enjoy some of the other stuff that we do. We are published by the collective Strangers in a Tangled Wilderness. In addition to this podcast, we have two other podcasts on our network. We also put out books regularly. We have some of the beautiful fancy zines and some skills zines that are available. You can check them out on our website. And if you want to become one of our Patreon supporters, you get early access to things, discounts on our materials, and you get, if you choose to subscribe at the $10 or more a month level, you get mailed a monthly zine as well. So we would love for you to say hello to us on our social medias and check those things out if you haven't already. Our Patreon supporters that toss us $20 a month or more get to be thanked at the end of all of our podcast episodes, and you get to pick what name you want to be known by on the thanks list. So we have a fun collection here, and I want to give a shout out to all of these lovely, wonderful individuals, organizations, pets, and so forth. So specifically, thank you to Haas the dog, Nicole and Tikva the dog, Micaiah, Chris, Kirk, Jennifer, Starro, Chelsea, Dana, David, Paige, SJ, Hunter, Theo, Boise Mutual Aid, Milicia, Paparuna, Allie, Janice and Odell, Princess Miranda, Community Books of Stone Mountain, Georgia, Lord Harkin, Carson, Marm, Catgut, Julia, People's University of Palestine, Eric, Patoli, E, Boldfield, Portland's Hedron Hackerspace, Appalachian Liberation Library, Ephemeral, Amber, Sunshine, Aiden, and Yuki the dog, Jason, Jenny, and Phoebe, the cats, Shulva, Blinkcat, Feral in WV, New Hampshire IWW, the Massachusetts chapter of the Socialist Rifle Association, the Canadian Socialist Rifle Association, Renegade Lens and Ink, Astoria Food Pantry, Karen, Sir Reginald McFluffy Butt III and Madam Valentine, Lancaster Chooses Love, Prodigal Maestro, Enchanted Rats of Turtle Island, Max, Hyunhee, A Future for Abby, Alexander Gopal, The Incredible Ren Arai, and the KO Initiative. Thanks so much. Bye.